I'm Kevin Middleton.
And I'm Samantha Berg. And this is The Bridge to Everywhere. Welcome to The Bridge to Everywhere. Join us as we explore health, community, and culture from a holistic perspective. Health topics addressed on our show are for information and entertainment and should not be taken as medical advice. If you have a medical condition, please consult an appropriate care provider.
Good evening, everybody. This is Kevin. I'm here in the studio with Samantha. Welcome to The Bridge to Everywhere. We have our guest today, Dr. Stacy Lowe from Life Family Chiropractic in Wasilla, and she specializes in chiropractic care for pregnant women and infants, and as well as children. And she treats men as well, and I go to her myself, and she's a phenomenal chiropractor, and we're really thrilled to have you on the show.
And you don't have to be pregnant or be a baby or a kid to go see her.
Because I'm neither one. I'm none of those.
All right, so we want to give you a little introduction to Dr. Stacy before we introduce her and have her introduce herself. So Dr. Stacy Lowe graduated with her doctorate in chiropractic from Life Chiropractic College West in 2004 and went into private practice in Wasilla that same year. Her focus is on pre- and postnatal pregnancy care in children. She works with pediatricians, obstetricians, and midwives in the area and had previously been located in a busy birth center until moving into a larger office in the North Rim Bank Building in Wasilla. She's about to begin a 100-hour certification program in neurodevelopment and neurointegrative protocols to enhance her skills working with children. So welcome to the show, Dr. Stacy. Great to have you here.
Thank you. It's going to be fun.
We're looking forward to it.
Awesome.
So what are we going to talk about?
I think we wanted to find out maybe just a little bit about how you got into chiropractic care, why you started, and maybe a little bit about what drove, kind of inspired you to go into this specialization.
Very simple. I grew up not knowing anything about chiropractic. I grew up in a military background, so Motrin 800 was the drug of choice for anything that ails you. And I started working in a chiropractic office, not knowing what it was about, but thought it looked like a fun thing to do. And I started getting adjusted just so I could see what it was like and experience what everybody else was coming for. And the low back pain that I thought was normal went away. But the biggest thing was I had lived, at that point, I was about 2 years on steady antibiotics for chronic allergies and sinus infections and bronchitis. And so as soon as I started getting adjusted, it just started to clear up.
And you were how old at this point?
25. So I lived with chronic allergies, sinus, also irritable bowel, a lot of digestive problems that ruled my life. So it was huge. It was a huge change for me. And I saw people crawl in and walk out and thought, this is really cool. I want to know more about this.
And for the folks who maybe aren't familiar with the word adjusting, can you say a little bit about what that is?
Absolutely. What I look at is how the spine is aligned. All of the vertebrae along the spine, including the pelvis and the sacrum, are supposed to stack up on top of each other. When they are aligned with the good curves, then the nerve flow coming from the openings will go to all the body parts they're supposed to. So if there's something, an area in the body where those vertebrae are not moving on top of each other the way they're supposed to, they can put pressure on the nerves. So what I do with an adjustment is realign that. I take the pressure off the nerves. It's not as simple as a bone in, bone out kind of thing, just because of all the soft tissue changes and blood vessels and everything that way. And especially with infants, we're not talking about bone and bone, but just making sure that freeing up the nervous system so that it can flow and function the way it's supposed to, so that everything works properly.
And there's a lot of different chiropractic techniques out there. We had Dr. Tom Taylor from Alaska Healing touch on a couple of weeks ago, and he talked specifically about a technique that he does. I think it's called the Blair technique.
Yes.
And it focuses on the upper C spine, so atlas and axis. Is there a style of chiropractic that you do, and what differentiates that from some of the other styles out there?
There is, and the cool thing about it is the definition of chiropractic, and the way it's described is that it's a science, art, and philosophy. And so there's science behind it, no doubt, how the neurological system functions. The philosophy of it is somewhat what differentiates some chiropractors from others. I am more of a holistic philosophy. I know that the body has to work with every other part of the body, and that I never pinpoint one area of the spine and say, oh, your low back hurts here, let's touch that there, that I know how everything has to function as a unit. Now, when we get into the art, there are over 300 different techniques. there's a technique for everybody. There's so many techniques out there that are just awesome. I've experienced just complete opposite type of adjustments from one from the other. Upper cervical care is very awesome. I'm very excited that there's somebody here doing it now. It's been pretty recent that we had somebody move into Anchorage that does upper cervical as well. So that's something that there's a need for different types of techniques for sure. And that's really great to have an upper cervical doc in the area too. I work with the entire spine, full body. I also do extremities. So again, we have nerves that connect to different body parts in the feet as well. So if you have something going on where one of those 26 bones in your foot isn't moving properly, that can free up areas of your nerve system as well.
Yeah, and you know, just getting back to the spinal column, there's nerves that are, when people think of chiropractic care specifically for back pain, that's one aspect you're affecting in the spinal column. But there's also the functional nerve function, like nerve function that maybe relates to organ function. Is that true? Something?
Absolutely. You know, we're thought of as the back doctors, and because we access the spine through the back for the most part, you know, upper cervical, obviously, through the neck, so that seems a little different. Some work a lot with cranial bones, which I do that as well, but that's a common misconception that we're good for back pain. We are great for back pain, but pain is only 10% neurologically what your nervous system is set up to do. So the other 90% is your function. Your muscle control is about 45%, and then your organ system communication, the autonomic nervous system, that's another 45%. So while I do obviously work with people in pain, I work with a lot, especially when we're talking about children, for digestive issues, for colic, for many other things that are not about pain.
And how would you go about evaluating someone who comes into your office? Because like you were saying, they may come in with back pain, but in the course of talking to them, you're going to hear about all sorts of other things, digestive complaints, allergies, other musculoskeletal issues going on. Maybe they're having trouble sleeping, stressed out, you know, all the kinds of things that come up. So what's your process for evaluating the person who comes through your office and sorting out what's going on with this particular person?
Well, I always start with the structural aspect. I start with, honestly, with what they've come in talking about, because that's their idea of what has been so crucially wrong or what they need immediate assistance with. Through education and easy explanations about the nervous system, the function, the spine, physiologically, we then get into more about what could be going on. Like, okay, you've had this low back pain for 15 years. Is this affecting your bowels? Is this affecting your uterus? Is this affecting other areas? A lot of foot pain, ankle pain comes from the low back and from the sacrum. Could that be affecting that as well? So I just branch out and keep asking questions and show how the nerve roots coming from the spine affect these different systems. So that's something that we then talk about. I don't jump to nutrition immediately. I don't jump to anything else. I start with the basic. Like, let's see how clear we can start to get your nervous system functioning and see if those other things start to change. If they don't, then we look at other avenues. I refer to many different providers. I always talk about drinking water. That's kind of an easy solution for a lot of things, but difficult for a lot of people.
Versus Pepsi or coffee, things
yes.
that dehydrate you. Yeah,
exactly.
And that can make a big difference on the health of the discs, right? If somebody's
Absolutely.
Chronically dehydrated.
And I always talk about diet as it relates to inflammation. And inflammation, we think of, we sprain our ankle, it swells up. Great. But we have inflammation that happens on a daily basis in all of our cells that can make chronic pain worse, that can lead to chronic pain and many other disorders. I mean, we know now that heart disease is mostly about inflammation.
And Alzheimer's too, right?
Yeah. So many
diabetes.
Disease processes have to do with inflammation. So I do always mention and talk about certain foods that will make that worse. And I started off with, hey, these are some things that may be affecting your body. If you want to know more, let me know and I can guide you there. And just see where they want to go. Not everybody's willing to take the whole step. Sometimes they just want to, you know, a little skip.
And you don't do x-rays in your office. Do you still use that machine where you're measuring the tension and the temperature on either side of the spine?
I do. I do not. I don't do a technique that requires x-rays. And I only use x-rays if there's something in the examination that there's a certain type of trauma or there's something that just doesn't quite feel right that I need to see a bigger picture of. So what I do is I measure my primary function, when you asked about the different types of techniques and the philosophy part about it, it really really is, I want to know how your nervous system is functioning. And so I have some different scans. I do a surface electromyography scan, which is measuring the electrical output of your muscle system. It's really cool because from the top of the head down to the bottom of the spine, I'm able to measure that activity to see if there's areas of your muscles working too hard or not hard enough. And most people are stunned when they realize that those tight muscles aren't overworked, they're just shut down and they're not working. So that's one test that I do. The other one is a thermography scan. And thermography is really becoming more popular as people are realizing how amazing it is to map body changes as well as completely non-invasive. So that one tells me how the autonomic system is functioning to a point. I'm not diagnosing conditions based on these, but the thermography scan has shown patterns. So when it's repeated over a period of time, if the pattern is showing up as showing imbalance in a certain organ system region, then I do refer out if it's been 3, 4, 5 scans where it seems to be getting worse in an area. And we have had people come back with kidney infections, with uterus 5 times the size it was supposed to be, and gallbladder disease. So that's one of the scans. But that tells me the function. It tells me how long there's been stress in an area, because pain is the last thing to come. So you can, just like going to the dentist, how many go to the dentist and everybody feels great, but they find a cavity. So if you go to the dentist in pain, you already know how bad it is. So these tests allow me to see what's happening and kind of the severity, perhaps, of the whole system.
And so you may be catching stuff before somebody would actually take themselves to their regular, you know, family MD and be complaining of a symptom. You're going to be seeing stuff in the scans that you're doing, and by putting your hands on their body, it's going to clue you into a place that might be out of balance.
Absolutely. Yeah. And when I feel an area, the most common area as I'm palpating, which is feeling the different levels of the spine, I'm going down someone's back and I get between shoulder blades. And, you know, it's a common area. We use that area a lot. Lots of times imbalanced. We are hunched forward. If you're at computers, you're doing a lot of that work. So there's a lot of pressure in that area. So I commonly feel through there, feel some misalignment, subluxations is what we call them, and ask the person, do you feel bloated after you eat? Do you have a lot of indigestion or heartburn? Most people say yes. Those nerves go to the stomach gallbladder. So if that information is not going properly, we think of it as either hyperactive or it's underactive. So hyperactive, you know, there are certain conditions and lifestyles and people and common conditions that hyperactivity can create. But when we have something really sluggish and not really functioning very well, then that's a whole other disease process category. But most people will say, oh my gosh, yeah, I have heartburn all the time, or oh, I this or that. Once I rule out whether they drink a case of Pepsi a week or not, then we go from there.
And that's it's a common problem that we see is the underfunctioning gallbladder. And with some people, it relates back to the fact that they have an underfunctioning thyroid, or it could be their diet.
And they often had tonsils removed earlier. Mm-hmm. There's like and a whole
had,
history.
Yeah, they may have had their tonsils out and their appendix out. And so the next thing to go might be the gallbladder. But if you catch it early, you can actually get the gallbladder functioning again. I'm a big fan of save the gallbladder.
You know, yes. I wanted to ask about chronic illness. Are you seeing an increase of particular profile of patient with illnesses? And you know, what are you seeing these days? And if they do come in, what would one expect in terms of outcomes from chiropractic care, and what kind of duration of treatment and a treatment plan?
There's a couple of different ways that I can answer that. With children, the biggest issues recently over the last 8 years out here is digestive problems. And it used to be where reflux, in reflux, I'm just using that word broadly because that's oftentimes what the moms come in telling me they have.
Meaning but that they're eating and it's just coming back up.
They're
or something's
eating,
coming back up. They're
yes.
burping a lot and there's a lot of gassiness. And
a lot of gassiness.
Immediate reflux, or is it after the fact?
Is it? Exactly. This is what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. The word reflux is thrown out a lot, just like colic is, just mm-hmm. like sciatica for mm-hmm. that part, yeah. for right. that matter. You know, it refers to something. So let's say more like constant spitting up. That's a big one. When we're talking about reflux, these are the kids who can't lay flat to sleep. These are the ones that always have to be propped up. These are the ones that they eat and eat and eat and eat all the time, and they're always covered in puke. That's these babies. I see a lot of that. And it used to be before, I would say about 4 years ago, I used to just flat out say about 50% of the kids that I work with have positive changes. About 50% don't. Now it seems that I have a much higher percentage, but I think I'm also a lot more adamant about diet as well. So I see a lot of positive changes with those types of symptoms, as long as they change the diet.
And if the mom's nursing, you're talking about the mom changing their diet too, right?
Yes. I unfortunately usually see the kids after, way after they've been living with this. You know, they're a year old already and they've been this way for 8 months. So oftentimes they're already on foods, they're bottle fed, different. A little easier to change a kid's diet than it is to have the mom change and breastfeeding and all that. But that's for kids, that's the biggest thing I see. And so many digestive complaints these days with gassiness, with it seems like anything they eat, with a lot of skin eruptions. There seems
food
to be
allergies.
Something happening now where there's so many different allergies going on. And so the way I look at that kind of thing with allergies right off is the way that I can help with that is if there's some interference in the nervous system, wherever it can be affecting immune system, so immune system is overreacting to these food products. There's, without going into, we don't even know what our food is anymore with the chemicals.
We'll
and
go
the,
into that a little bit. But
the
yeah.
things, you know, that aside... With all of that aside, if the nervous system is not communicating 100%, you're going to be hyperactive, overreactive, and that's what allergies are.
And that's what you mean by interference, the nervous system
yes.
not working. Like there's some place where the signal's not getting to where it needs to get to?
Yes. Mm-hmm. There's a really easy analogy that I like to use is a garden hose. You turn the hose on, the water comes on, there's a steady flow coming out. If you put your thumb over the end, the water's going to come out thinner, faster. If you clamp the whole hose off, then you're not going to get any flow. So that's a really simple explanation, but the nervous system is like that. And so a lot of these processes, allergies, asthma, autism, ADHD, those are all kind of on the same hyperactivity. The nervous system is overreacting. Kids with a lot of sensitivity issues don't like to be touched. I've worked with five-month-olds that didn't like to be touched. And
even
it's not,
by their mother?
Even by their mother. They want the basic needs met, and then they don't want to cuddle. A five-month-old didn't want to cuddle. They respond really quickly. And so I have seen a huge change in turnaround in kids with those sensitivity issues. Younger they are, the easier it is to make the changes.
And we did an interesting experiment a few years back where you were using your scan on me, and we did a pre-scan, and then I drank a cup of coffee, which I very rarely drink, and then we re-scanned. And I was shocked, even though I knew at the time, and I even know more about how caffeine and coffee affects the nervous system, but it was shocking to see the difference in the scan before and after, just drinking a cup. So, and sugar will do the same thing, and, you know, genetically modified food and chemicals and all that, but to see it, you know, actually on paper what it's doing in real time. So it's not there's long-term effects for sure, but there was an effect right in the moment within a half hour of drinking the cup of coffee.
I just used your example today showing that because I couldn't get a good read on a scan, and I said, did you just drink caffeine recently? And he had earlier. So but yes, caffeine's a stimulant, so it makes the nervous system overreact. So when we're talking about dietary issues with children and kids and kind of going off in a different direction, but anything they're eating is a stimulant, which is sugar, grains, which create insulin, glycemic index, crazy reactions in the system, and anything with food colorings or chemicals. Or
kids are getting caffeine now, too.
Oh, man,
all the Red Bull and the Monster.
Going into Starbucks and coming out with, you know, a kid in a stroller loaded with a thing that's got whipped cream to the top. And it's like, I mean, the little kid, the little baby, or not baby, but a toddler that size.
Yeah, it's really tricky, and if they have anything going on with their nervous system to begin with, that's the kind of stuff that then escalates pretty easy, and most people don't catch it, and right now there's just such a overabundance of ADHD. You know, at what point do we even know whether these are just active kids and they're okay, or are there so many chemical sensitivities, or are there, you know, it's becoming so hard to even differentiate where the problem is stemming from. Do we really have that big of a problem, or, you know, where's it all coming from?
And then I think about the just how much, you know, diabetes, you know, how much it's escalating in this country, you know, and so that's another piece too, is like is that we're sort of on a continuum there. You're seeing these symptoms early on, and if they're not addressed, you know, this is probably a person who might be looking at diabetes early, you know, in their 20s or maybe even in their teens, you know, if they're not careful about what they're putting in their body.
Yeah, there's something that it's really been on my radar a lot, because I have had so many people lately with digestive complaints, and it starts off with the not really thinking about it very much, you know, because everybody thinks digestive system, do you have a bowel movement? Well, sure. So everything's fine. And I don't generally get into how many a day, or I don't generally go there unless there's a consistent problem. And then I know, you know, people that I can refer out to, because that's not something that I work with. However, I can see these things. I catch these things. A lot of low back issues, low back pain can be digestive problems. So there are a lot of things that I work with, but it's really been on my radar when all of a sudden I had all of these people that had been coming into my practice for a while having their gallbladders taken out in a weekend, or having yet another appointment done where they drank the chemical to have the this test done and that test because there's something with my stomach not quite right. I've seen so much of that lately that I've really been much more on it in that initial examination, describing and talking about some of just describing what a normal digestive process should be like, and that if you're starting to get sluggish and energy-wise overall, this is something to take a look at. And one of the scans that we didn't talk about before is I do a heart rate variability scan. And what this does is it's measuring heart rate, sweat gland production, and skin temperature. These three things together give us an idea about whether your body has got a good balance between the parasympathetic and sympathetic system.
That's the fight or flight versus rest and digest.
Yep. Right now, rest and digest. Digestive system should be working good. Heart rate steady. Fight or flight, and I always use the example, so you leave here, you walk out, and the bear runs at you. Oh my gosh, who cares about digestion then? It's all about heart rate, adrenaline, cortisol, all these chemicals that have to pump through your body to save your life. Well, so this scan shows me what balance they're in, or imbalance. And so one of the things I always discuss is when I see that they're in that fight or flight is I talk about digestive health. I talk about probiotics. I talk about certain types of foods that could be creating more of an issue. And so that's something that I put out there right at the beginning now all of the time as something to look out for and then to guide in different directions.
So let's switch gears a little bit, because I really want to talk about your focus and your focus is
and how you got to this focus. Yeah. We didn't get quite
Yeah. So let's just start there, because we really want to get into your work with pregnant moms and babies and toddlers. And so if you could tell us a little bit about how you got into it, and then I would also just like to hear from your perspective some of the common things that you see with birth issues and how they affect kids long term. That just that fight or flight, rest and digest piece. Like I think at this, you know, can all the different interventions that we do with birth in our culture. I mean, I think some kids come into the world basically stuck in fight or flight. And so one of the things that you can do is get them out of that. But just talk a little bit about in general how you got interested in working with pregnant women and babies.
You know, I'm trying to even remember at what point I knew that's what I wanted to do. I was very interested in pediatrics courses in chiropractic school, and I can't remember an exact how did I get into it, but my overall thought process was, I just remembered exactly. So there's this really awesome chiropractor, and I listened to him speak a lot, and he said something once. He had a 90-year-old woman come to his office, debilitating pain, chronic illness, 8 medications, and this was 50 years ago, so 8 medications was big then. Now it's common, but... And she said, well, there's nothing you can do for me. And he said, you know what? There is nothing I can do for you. But you go home and you get your grandkids and you bring your grandkids in here, because they're the ones that we can effect a change on. You, we may not be able to help. We can't reverse this. But your grandkids can grow up healthier.
Wow.
And so that kind of shift. And I thought, did you really say that? And he said, I really did. She really made me mad. She kept yelling at me. So... but it is true. And I've actually said similar things to people like that recently. you know, hey, you've got your grandkid at home and you just said that they're having all these problems right now. Look where you are now. So that was kind of what spurred me on and thinking, man, if these kids start off better, they're not going to have all these issues. And I always had allergies. I always had allergies and stuff as a kid. So to me, that was a little personal as well. Like, oh my gosh, you know, if we can help them then.
Yeah, I think it's a common misconception that people say, oh, well, you know, it's genetic. I've got, you know, my parents have heart disease, so I'm going to have heart disease, or my parents have diabetes, or my parents have high blood pressure. And we always say, well, are you eating the same things that your parents ate? Or do you have the same sedentary lifestyle that your parents had? You know, are you doing the same thing? Because if you do something different, just because you have that, you know, you're genetically related to your parents, does not mean you're automatically going to get what it is that they have. But in families, you know, the same patterns tend to show up. You know, your mom did it that way, so you do it that way, and therefore you get the same kind of condition that your mom has. But if you do it differently, then you might not end up with what she has.
You know, I could go on for hours on epigenetics, yep. But it's been proven for a long time now that genes do not control your cell.
Exactly.
They're not the brain. And nobody talks about, when they're talking about genetic predisposition, they're supposed to include family and social as well, because those habits you just mentioned there. But that is something that I constantly try to work with people, like, hey, you know what, if you change your environment, you can change what happens. Genetics are a very small percentage.
Yeah, we love the book, The Biology of Belief by Bruce Lipton.
He's awesome.
He's got several talks on, you can go to YouTube and check him out and just hear what he has to say about epigenetics, that it's not, you're not determined by your genes. And it's funny, in some ways in our medicine, people want to know, you know, I want to know what my genome says, and I want to know what it is that I'm going to get. And it's good information there, because you can go, well, these are the things that I'm predisposed to, so you know what steps to take to not end up with those things. But just because you have it in your genetic code does not mean that you're going to get that thing.
There's a passive role, I think, that has to be overcome. And I think that a genetic conclusion appeals to the lazy part of us. Well, this is the way it is. And then our habits, just our lifelong habits, actually sort of don't get to, I don't have to do that hard work. Look, it's going to be hard. You're talking about change. And boy,
big change.
You know, yeah. And so when my family, they've got all these issues. And so then you can almost hear when patients talk about it, you can almost hear the sort of, they've kind of, you know, just
they've entered victim mode.
Yeah, yeah. And so what we try to do is say, whoa, you're settling for something so small here. This is absolutely not the case. And to get, you know, really to help them get inspired and excited about creating their future. So, I mean, that's to me what it's all about, is actually just in the moment, you know, somebody hears that, it's like you can see the light go on, your eyes brighten up, and like, whoa, they get shocked out of sort of this delusion, this cloud of suffering that they've just been sort of, you know, surrendering to. And it's like, whoa, seriously? And, you know, an amazing thing is it doesn't take long. You know, 3 or 4 weeks of changing your diet, and it's miraculous.
Right. Right. And there are people that are out there looking for that change. And but when we start off with the kids, then it's much easier to grow.
Yeah.
To grow healthy.
So those habits didn't actually get too entrenched. Yeah.
So we're going to take a break here for a couple of minutes, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Bridge to Everywhere with Kevin and Sam, and we're interviewing Dr. Stacy Lowe from Life Family Chiropractic. We'll be right back.
Community radio is what you make it. If you want to be involved with Radio Free Palmer, contact us on the web, radiofreepalmer.org. We're looking for ideas, we're looking for volunteers, and we're looking for help. Thank you so much, and enjoy.
Downtown Delhi. Palmer Downtown Delhi provides free Wi-Fi in an informal, casual, conversational environment, or for just individual solace. Breakfast, lunch, or dinner dishes, wraps, specialty sandwiches, soups, or desserts, including gelato Italian ice cream, are offered along with coffee, espresso, tea, specialty waters, or drinks. Music Arts Performing Live can be enjoyed every Saturday evening from 6 to 8 p.m. A comprehensive summary of Palmer Downtown Deli's menu options can be found at palmerdeli.com, and phone orders at 745-4100 are available as well. The Palmer Downtown Deli is located on South Alaska Street. The Palmer Downtown Deli, supporting community connectivity and community radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Bridge to Everywhere. This is Kevin and Sam, and we're interviewing Dr. Stacy Lowe from Life Family Chiropractic in Wasilla. And Dr. Stacy specializes in treatment of pregnant women, infants, and children. And we talked a little bit about how you've gotten into this interest and the results that you're seeing. But I want to get a little bit into the nuts and bolts of what you do and working with kids.
Yeah, we'd like to know some of the benefits of. So let's say I'm pregnant and I want to know how is chiropractic going to help me with pregnancy, and how is it going to help with a better outcome, and some of the things where baby's not in a good position. So how can chiropractic help turning a baby? We've worked that together a lot of times between acupuncture and chiropractic, helping women with a baby that's not in a good position so they can have a normal vaginal birth. So if we could talk about some of those things, that would be awesome.
Yes, working with pregnant women is pretty awesome. The first thing I do, obviously, during the exam is check out what their spine is doing and what their nervous system is doing. And I talk a lot about, again, the physiology, that nerve flow that has to happen. Then with pregnant women, there's an extra step. The actual structure of the pelvis has to do some pretty miraculous things when it comes time for birth. So I do some specific ligament work, and primarily with the round ligament, which attaches directly on the pubic bone and goes to the uterus. So when I start with somebody pretty early on in pregnancy, if they had any issues to begin with, those kind of need to be addressed. The awesome thing is when people start getting adjusted during pregnancy is they have relaxin, which kind of relaxes all of the ligaments, muscles, and it really makes adjusting easier. So I work with their spine as they're going, and the best way to describe it is each step of that pregnancy, as the baby grows and changes their body, I help their body adapt to those changes. Pregnancy is not supposed to be pain-free. You're growing a person, and you're carrying them around with you. And ligaments, muscles stretching, body structure is changing, so that center of gravity shifts. So those are some of the primary things that I'm working with when I'm working with a pregnant woman, is how is her body adapting to it. That's the whole goal. And if the pelvis and ligaments and everything are able to move freely, then when it comes time for labor and delivery, everything's going to move the way it's supposed to. The hard part for me is when I hear about somebody who describes their labor as incredibly long, horrible, they pushed forever. Sometimes they push the baby back in. Oh, the baby's too big. You're not going to be able to do this. Oh, your pelvis just wasn't, you couldn't move. You couldn't do anything. And once I find out that they were not on their back, which closes the pelvis off about 25%, then I always think, man, if only they'd gotten adjusted during it, their pelvis wouldn't have been locked up. They would have been able to do it. And I'm not even talking about the pain factor that can be associated with that. Just the actual structure not moving the way it's supposed to, the way it's designed.
There's a few things about what you said. One is that the assumption is that, well, I'm going to wait until I get pregnant before I go in and get treatment. And so when you think about what the potential, how you can help women through their pregnancy, one of the best things would be to do, if you're thinking about getting pregnant, start getting adjusted now. So think about it in terms of preventative care. And then the other thing that you were addressing is a lot of misinformation out there about what is a normal pregnancy and what is a normal birth and what women should experience. And it really depends on the provider that they're working with and what kind of education that they've received. And often I find that women go through, I'm usually seeing, not always, but I'm often seeing women who've gone through one pregnancy in one way, and the experience just did not work out for them for whatever reason, whether the outcome was not what they were expecting. They may maybe they ended up having a C-section, or they ended up having to do pain meds or an epidural, which they weren't expecting to have to do, or they didn't feel like the coaching or the guidance that they were given in the class that they took really helped them through. And then the next time around, the second pregnancy, they're really searching for information on how to do things differently. So, you know, what I really think one of the things that you do is you're really committed to getting that education out there first, so that women don't have to go through some of these things that, you know, that a lot of women experience just because they don't know any better, that, you know, that nobody's actually told them that a normal pregnancy can look a whole bunch of different ways. And I can't tell you how many women I've heard told that their pelvis wasn't big enough to have the baby. Oh, your pelvis is too narrow, so you're going to have a C-section. You know?
That's a common one. The majority of the pregnant women that I work with use midwives. I do work a lot with some obstetricians that I know well and some that I don't know very well. But my whole goal and what I do with these ladies is I want them to feel empowered as they're going through there. So a sidestep from what I'm doing as their chiropractor is I am also offering encouragement. I have a huge lending library. I just say, you know, I want them to surround themselves with people that have done it. And the thing about normal pregnancy, what's normal, what's not. Well, that's going to be different for everybody. So I try to use the word common. You know, well, you know what? This is common during pregnancy, if that. I'm on a couple mothering blogs on Facebook, and I'm astounded at what some of these ladies are writing on there about chronic shooting pain going up and down their spine and shooting down their leg. And, oh, I went to my doctor today, and they told me that was normal because I'm pregnant. And some of these women are living with that mm-hmm. kind of thing, and to which I always reply, hey, if it's one-sided and it's got shooting involved or sharp, then it's not a normal part of it. It's not, it means something's wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, you should feel some pain because things are moving around, shifting, but it should be more like workout type pain, not crazy, not stabbing, sharp shooting. So one of the things I definitely do, and I know you do as well, is it's about empowering that mom, because there's nothing worse than hearing their birth story and with them hanging their head and describing it as all of these things got away from them and they had no control, which it's not about control, but they weren't prepared for what could happen. And then some of that goes into the trust that they had with that provider or not.
How important is exercise, stretching, yoga, and, you know, and movement?
Life is movement. So if we don't move, we're dead. So everything. I recommend getting in the pool. You know, we've got the saltwater pool there in Wasilla now, which is pretty awesome. I recommend yoga all the time. The other cool thing about yoga is that it teaches your body to be in uncomfortable positions, and you learn how to deal with that. That's what labor is. So I always try to push yoga. If they're not comfortable going to a class, doing it at home, but surrounding themselves with other people that are doing these things and moving, because movement is key. And nutrition. You know, I have some fantastic nutritional books in the office. I work with Matt Sumud-Wifery a lot. Aubrey Spangler is a naturopath.
Yep, she was our first.
Sorry.
Yeah, nurse practitioner. She was the first guest we had on our show. She's wonderful.
She does some great nutrition classes. A lot of the different centers around here, they're all of the different centers, Holly Steiner and Heritage, they're all working with nutrition, because you're growing a baby. You have to feed the baby the ingredients to be healthy.
And not only that, but your body's going to feed the baby first before it feeds you.
So oh, yeah.
That's where it's
that's
all going.
That's what mommy brain is about. Right. FYI, that's what mommy brain is. That baby will suck all of your brain fats out. You have to add more fats, good fats.
Right.
You have to add those.
And plenty of protein,
too. I talk
too,
about those a lot. Absolutely. Yeah. So anyway, so I don't step in. I'm not there to be their, I'm not their primary provider when it comes to the pregnancy, but I do a lot of supportive methods and supportive information referrals sometimes if necessary, just to make sure that they're getting the good nutrition, they're getting the movement, and I'm there to support them in their process.
Any particular resources or books that you like? I know personally I like it's Helsey Gore or Hensey Gore?
Hensey
Gore, The Thinking Woman's Guide to Pregnancy. I like that book.
You know, the number one book that I recommend to everyone is Ina Mae Gaskin's Guide to Childbirth. And the reason is, and I try to gauge personality. You know, is this person going to read everything about pregnancy every step of the way and be empowered by that and think it's cool, or are they going to start freaking out? You know, do they need the book that tells you 8,000 things that could go wrong, or do they need to know just kind of what some of the steps are? But that book by Ina Mae Gaskin, is the first 50 pages is one birth story after another about women who have done it. And they're going to find somebody in there that they align with, that they can resonate with. Some they're not going to, and some of the stories are odd. So I tell them to flip to the next story and just keep moving, but not to watch TLC, Baby Story, any of those drama.
No baby 911 stories.
Oh my gosh. Those are all about, it's for ratings, so they have drama on there. And so women need to see that it can happen naturally, and that's what Ina Mae's book does as well. There's quite a few out there, and Business of Being Born movies are fantastic. They just need to surround themselves with positive thoughts.
The Russian water birth is amazing. That's just one of the most inspiring things I've ever seen.
That one is a bit much, and I have to gauge again who I recommend that one to. But again, that's just I think four different women in their living rooms in water, and they have their babies, and it's all like no big deal. The whole family's in the room with them, and that's not a lot of what our culture is surrounded by. There are definitely some out there, but I try to just figure out kind of where they are and steer them towards books. But I recommend Ina Mae to everybody, and if they just, I don't even care if they read the second half, which that has great information, but sometimes just reading more. I also have a couple books written by the editors from Mothering Magazine, which no longer exists, but Mothering Magazine, one's called Having a Baby Naturally, and one's called Raising a Family Naturally. And it goes through all of the stages, including stress, which doesn't get talked about a lot, but stress during pregnancy and before pregnancy, trying to conceive.
I was wondering if you could maybe walk us through some of the phases of pregnancy and the common conditions that you see in that progression.
That's a tricky one. I don't know that I can break it down into to trimesters necessarily with conditions. Obviously, towards the end, they describe some more of like groin type pain, because the weight of the baby pulling their pelvis forward can create problems, pain that way. Talk to somebody today about that. Sometimes they'll describe carpal tunnel. They'll describe, I have carpal tunnel now. Okay, tell me where that is on your hand. Because carpal tunnel is a word, that's just thrown out there, and it's usually not accurate. But you have extra water retention, and side, if you're sleeping on your side, which most pregnant women do, then it can be putting pressure on the lower part of the neck and the brachial plexus by the shoulder blades there, which constrict the nerve flow to the hands. So those are some that I could specifically say later on. But the biggest thing that I just I have some nerve charts that show the organ systems as they're connected to the different levels of the spine and some of the symptoms that can come up during pregnancy. So there's a couple areas. It's fascinating. Anybody that has come to me with a baby in a breech position already matches up with C2, the second vertebra in the neck, L3, the third lumbar vertebra in the low back, and then the sacrum being misaligned. So there's some interesting patterns that I see commonly, and some of the patterns are just based on weight distribution as the center of gravity shifts. And this is if it's a one-time mom. If you're talking about a mom who's got five other ones, running around, whole different ball game. But a lot of the things that women come to me for originally in pregnancy is usually it's low back pain, or usually it's hip pain. Or I work with, like I said, a lot of midwives. The midwives say, hey, we know women deliver faster and easier if they're under chiropractic care during pregnancy. And so I'm starting to get a lot of ladies that they're not in crisis, which is awesome. They're not in crisis, but they understand, hey, let's check to see if my pelvis is really moving the way it's supposed to. And I do get referred some ladies that are already in labor. Labor's not progressing. Now, it's easier if I've worked with them in the past, but I've had I had two ladies in 1 week not progressing, walked in by the midwife. One started having contractions before she walked out the door, and the other one had her baby later that day. So it really stimulates by adjusting the ligaments, freeing those up, but also making sure that the whole hormonal cascade of events that is supposed to happen, that all those chemicals are let down. And if there's interference in the spine, it could be blocking that.
Interesting.
Somebody who's got a breech baby, what's the latest you've seen a breech baby turn in your practice?
36 weeks. And that's, really, when are they classified as breech? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's
right.
I see that shift around all the time. But by 36 weeks, the baby's pretty darn big. Mm-hmm. So if there's been a lot of pain in the pelvis of the mom during pregnancy, lots of low back pain, one-sided, or they know that the baby's kind of been hanging on one side all the time, and those are the early signs to get checked to see that everything is flowing. And I've had some ladies that I've worked with that I've even seen their pelvises cleared out. They're at 38, 39 weeks pregnant. Pelvis cleared, round ligament feels awesome, like it's loose, it's like it's movable, and that baby's not moving. So there's a point where the baby knows best at that point. But I work with the entire spine. I'm not touching the baby. I'm not pushing the baby. There's nothing about me actually turning the baby, nothing like a medical aversion that's done. But all I'm doing is freeing up the pelvis and the round ligament that attaches to the uterus. So we don't really even call it breech turning. It used to be that way, but I mean, we're not doing that. But by freeing everything up so the baby has all the space it needs, that's going to guarantee more of a better delivery.
Right, you're
than
just
not.
Creating the conditions where the baby
creating
can
the
turn.
Open space.
But, yeah,
yep.
But I'm always coaching the pregnant women that I'm working with that we want to be thinking about seeing the baby heading in a downward direction earlier than a lot of people think. That cutoff is 36 weeks, and that's when I need to go and get care.
Right.
But you should be thinking about it. I mean, from Chinese medical standpoint, we're thinking about it like 31, 32, 33. We want to see something, even if the baby's not staying head down. We want to see that movement trending towards that direction. And so if I'm not seeing that, then I know that we need to do something. And so that's another argument for why you would want to be in chiropractic care through the pregnancy, so that you don't end up that place in the first place.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And that's really how we want to think about it. Is, first of all, pregnancy is not a medical condition. I want to make sure that's really clear. This isn't this is a natural process. And if you're taking care of yourself through the process, there's a lot of things that, not always, obviously, there's, you know, sometimes you have a placenta that's just in the wrong place, or you have a cord that's wrapped, or you have, you know, an injury and the body just can't move around it, and so you do have a baby that doesn't turn. But a lot of times there's simple things that you can do, and there's care that you can get to ensure the best possible outcome.
Yeah, one of the kind of phrases that we use often is, I make the adjustment and then I get out of the way. And it's all about, hey, you know, I've freed up as much as I can. Let's see what your body can do with that. And most of the time, your body does a pretty darn good job with it. Just depends at which stage. But it's really rewarding, especially to hear midwives describe seeing so many first-time moms when they're under care delivering so much faster and easier. And I've worked with quite a few moms as well who've had posterior births, which you can do a posterior birth naturally.
And posterior is where the baby's facing up instead of down. Yeah.
And so the, you know, babies usually have some issues that way because their heads are jammed a little bit, but they can do that. But it's not comfortable at all for mom if labor can ever be comfortable, but it's definitely harder. It's a lot harder. I've had two moms within a couple months that their first two babies were posterior, their third baby, while they were under care, was the easiest thing they'd ever done. So that was really awesome. But that segues really nicely into what happens to the baby as
they
come in.
That was my next question. Right, so the kinds of things that you see with babies if they're posterior or if they're a C-section versus a vaginal birth, the kinds of issues that you deal with babies.
Maybe before we do that, I just wanted to get a common treatment plan that pregnant women might be on. Is there something you might say about that?
Sure. It depends. It depends on how much stuff they had going on before pregnancy. And the questions that I ask are, hey, do you have any of these symptoms before and during pregnancy? Because that gives me an idea. The scans, again, give me an idea about the length of time something may have been interfering in their systems. And then, like I said, pregnant women start to respond much faster because of the hormones. So, for example, somebody that doesn't really have much, you know, many complaints necessarily, that would be, I always recommend one time a week as they go until they have the baby. And that is so that I can constantly watch to see that their body's adapting properly to the changes. Because they're changing all of the time. If somebody has a lot of issues to begin with, then we're doing a frequency of more like 2 to 3 times a week for a while. Because we really have that feeling of 2 steps forward, 3 steps back for a little while. If we're working on symptom relief, but if we're working on structural changes and overall nervous system changes, then they get fantastic results. But symptoms may linger a lot longer in somebody who has a lot of chronic stuff to begin with.
Okay, so let's talk about some of the things that can happen to that baby with
So birth. The sunny side up baby, though, I mean, just the way that they end up coming out, their occiput's jammed. So the occiput is the bottom bone in the back of the skull that moves with the first vertebra. And the occiput tends to be jammed, because when they come out, I'm doing the visual, but you can't see me. They come out normally this way, but when they come out sunny side up, it's like their chin's jammed down to their chest. So that can put a ton of strain, and then they're coming out, so they're constantly hitting. So it's just throwing off the whole structure of all the cranial bones. So another thing that I do, and I do this in adults as well, but I always do this on every child, is I assess the positioning of the cranial bones. So we always think of our skull as one deal, but it's not one unit. It has space in between all of the different bones, and that's where the cerebral spinal fluid flows. So it's essential to have spaces between there. Not everybody's supposed to be totally symmetrical. However, you need to have even space between the bones side to side and front to back. So I always check those as well. And they can shape. I mean, no doubt they change. I mean, the baby just came through the pelvis, so their whole head kind of narrows down, and it's called molding, and that all those cranial bones move and shift. That's what that soft spot is on the front of the head. It's that extra space so those bones can move the way they need to get out. So that molding happens 2 to 4 days. I always hear a little bit of a different time after the baby's born. So if baby has cone head and it doesn't seem to be changing, then you really want to make sure and get it checked so that you can see that it's not going to create more issues. Now, sunny side up has its own specific thing. Now, C-section babies, C-section babies aren't going through all of the. Some are doing natural C-sections. It's just not very prevalent where they're actually beginning labor. But contractions are squishing the baby, if you will. They're molding the baby. They're moving the baby's body processes so that they function better. And that's what all the labor contractions do. They're squeezing the baby, essentially. So a C-section, if it's scheduled, you're not getting any of that pre-labor kind of stuff happening. And so sometimes just by the way they have to pull them out, they're not just laying there and they lift them up. They're putting some pretty significant force on their heads pulling them out. So the issues that they have is if mom's pelvis was misaligned somewhat to begin with, and they had some sort of malposition in uterus, which can happen, especially if they're doing a pre-planned because of breech or something like that, then that baby could have already had stress on the spine. Now, they're not getting the molding. They're not getting any of the compression. So some C-section babies tend to be fussier. They tend to have more stress at the very top of the neck. And as well as if babies are actually pulled out. When I work with a baby with forceps, the head shape is usually just totally asymmetrical, crazy, and they usually describe symptoms as crying, can't turn their head to one side, only like to eat one side versus the other. And I do a nice little sheet that says the top 10 ways to know if your baby needs to be checked by a chiropractor. And some of it are simple things like one cheek is really big. These are all of the different things that can happen if there's that asymmetry, if there's that torsion happening in all the cranial bones. But one cheek is really big, one eye is bigger than the other. They smile and their smile is really crooked, which looks really cute, but that's a sign that things aren't lined up right. Their jaw clicks at all. They can't latch on. I've been called to the birth center to adjust newborns because they're not able to latch on at all. And if there's anything at the top of the neck, that latching on is a reflex. Sucking is a reflex, and it's motor control. You have to be able to use your muscles in your mouth and your jaw to suck. So there's a couple different factors in there, and I've had babies, able to latch on after releasing the occiput and the top of the neck.
That was going to be my next question. So you, in some cases, you're adjusting a baby within hours of birth.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah. My favorite was my favorite, only because he was still hot. He was 20 minutes old, and he was just, oh my gosh, just hot and soft and squishy, and that's why I started calling them hot babies, because I was stunned at how hot he was still. Wow. But yes, I'll get called in, 5 hours, 6 hours, because a baby can hold out. Mm-hmm. Ideally, you want to see that they're going to latch on, but... right away, but I get called in usually within 6 hours or so, I would say, and sometimes it's not for days or weeks, because they'll see a lactation consultant and they'll try to figure out different ways, and there's so many facets to it, but man, so many times when I check the top of the neck and there's something going on, then It's such a simple motion to help relieve that for them.
And are you adjusting with a single fingertip or how?
Oftentimes it's my fingertips. It's just slight pressure. Moving a baby's occiput is so easy. There's no turning their heads. I motion their heads to see what it can do and what it can't, but it's nothing like an adult adjustment. You know, sometimes it's a matter of me setting my fingertip under and just using the weight of their head, and then it's all in the direction it needs to go. So it's just amazing.
It seems so, you know, so simple, and so it's like, why wouldn't you try that?
Oh my gosh, it's so simple.
As people go through, I know that, you know, I've known people who've had issues with the baby not latching on and not being able to nurse, and again, there's like a whole level of frustration and irritation, and how come, you know, is it me? Am I doing something wrong? What's wrong with the baby? And going through the, you know, the lactation consultant, but why not try that and just see if that's an issue?
And that's not something it's not well known. Mm-hmm. No, a lot of people think that a chiropractor is for back pain, you know, after you just yourself in an accident, you know, and so they think of the baby as delicate and perfect, and like people, they don't even realize like dogs have a spine and nervous system as well. Mm-hmm. They benefit from chiropractic as well, you know, and that's so people just don't think about that for babies. Well, the baby didn't injure themselves, so why would you naturally think that? I mean, to me, the biggest atrocity that I see is infants wearing helmets on their head to reshape them. I mean, I have a violent reaction every time I see that. To me, that's insanity. I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I can do a couple releases and that baby's head is going to start to change, and you're molding the baby's head, and it always causes huge lesions on their head because it's got to push somewhere. So there are just so many things that chiropractic is just so easy. It's safe. It's non-invasive. It's natural. There's no chemicals. We're not doing anything that's putting undue force on a baby, but it can have such amazing changes and results.
And you're just allowing the body to do what it knows how to do.
Exactly.
You're just giving it the opportunity to do what it already wants to do, but for some reason things got a little stuck or jammed up.
Exactly. And babies, man, they tell you, you know, you can stare at a baby and they'll tell you exactly when it's a little sore, when it's not, and they just sink in it when they sigh and they lay back. I've had a 2-week-old try to grab my fingers off of her neck because she was so edgy and irritable, and it took about 3 adjustments, and then mom said, man, she's just a peaceful baby now. But no one was getting sleep in that house.
And we have go ahead.
I was just going to ask for any other stories you might share.
I was going to say, we have a few more minutes, so I know there's a few things that parents of toddlers, one is, you know, bedwetting issues. You know, have mm-hmm. you seen any results with that? And also, you know, again, back to ADHD, or, you know, all the way from ADHD to the autism spectrum. You know, if you treat, I know that you've treated some kids who are severely autistic and the kinds of things that you've seen. And, you know, we can cover that in the next 2 minutes. That'll be great.
Perfect. No problem. My focus is going in the direction of working more with ADHD, autistic sensory integration problems. I am beginning a 100-hour certification course dealing with them a little bit more specifically. But there's so many components to it, and it seems to be so prevalent around here these days. But with ADHD, again, if that nervous system is overfiring, it's hyperactive, then of course it's going to make you edgier. Kids also don't know how to express pain sometimes. They don't know if something's just uneasy in your body and they don't know what it is, they're going to act irritable or edgy. Babies do that as well. They have no way to speak. Toddlers, they don't. So they can sometimes be appearing to act out when indeed there's something going on in their body. And parents say it to me all the time. Well, he wakes up crying with his leg. You know, it's just growing pains. And it's written off because, oh, it's just growing pains. Which, what is that? You know, they're in pain. There's something going on. I mean, really? Your growth plates just hurt? No, there's some sort of imbalance somewhere. And people that come to me for growing pains don't have growing pains afterwards. So there's so many facets with kids and ear infections. Oh my gosh, ear infections are the biggest thing ever. If there's any interference at the top of the neck, it increases pressure and fluid buildup inside the ear by adjusting the neck and by adjusting and releasing the ears. Huge changes in ear infections.
Great. That's huge. Awesome. So if people want to get in touch with you, can you just say your website and your phone number so they can call?
Yes. The office number is 373-4325. We're located in the North Rim Bank Building in Wasilla on Cruzy Street. And our website is www.lifefamilychiro.net. I'd be happy to work with anybody.
That's great. Thank you so much for being with us tonight, Dr. Stacy. Next week, we're going to have Julie Muir from Farm 779. It's a production peony farm, and unique in the sense that she is totally committed to sustainable growing, so that really a minimal impact on the land that she's growing. We're going to be speaking with her next Monday night at 7 p.m., and I hope you can join us then.
Thanks, everyone, for joining us, and thanks, Dr. Stacy, for being here this evening. It was great.
Thank you.
Programming support.